Welcome to today's program, titled Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, Tax Act, and Federal Wine Excise Taxes. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. For those of you who are logged into the web presentation, you are encouraged to submit questions throughout the conference by selecting the chat pod located in the lower left corner of your screen, then type and send your question that way. At the end of today's event, a link to an online evaluation will be displayed on your screen. Please take a few moments to complete it. We do appreciate your feedback. I would now like to introduce our hosts for today's call, Kelly Luzania, Jana McCamey, and Martha Tebbenkamp. Kelly, you may begin.
Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to the tax webinar, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and the Federal Wine Excise Taxes. This webinar is brought to you by Davis Wright Tremaine and the Oregon Wine Growers Association. My name is Kelly Luzania. I'm an attorney at Davis Wright Tremaine, and one of my focus areas is alcohol excise taxes and privilege taxes. Also presenting today is Jana McCamey, OWA's Government Affairs Director, and Martha Tebbenkamp, a field investigator with the TTB. So let's get started. An overview of our presentation today. So first, Jana's going to go into some background on the Tax Act. And Martha is going to take over and talk about what has changed under the Tax Act and what stayed the same. Martha will go over the wine excise tax rates. Credits were expanded for producers, and she'll talk about which activities qualify as production. Martha will go into detail about the TTB alternate procedure, this new procedure that was issued through TTB guidance for wine transfers and bond. And then I will switch over to some of the changes to the TTB taxpayer definitions, including single taxpayer and controlled groups, and talk about the Federal Tax Act's impact on blended wine and potential impacts on OLCC privilege taxes. So I'll hand it over to Jana.
Good afternoon. I wanted to provide everyone with some background on the Craft Beverage Modernization and Tax Reform Act and the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act before we get into the details with TTB and Davis-Wright Tremaine. In December 2014, the Oregon Wine Growers Association was invited by Senator Wyden's Finance Committee staff in Washington, D.C. to work on legislative language to reduce federal excise taxes for every Oregon winery. This was part of an effort by Senator Wyden to provide tax relief for beer, cider, distilled spirits, and wine producers. In June 2015, Senator Wyden introduced the Craft Beverage Modernization and Tax Reform Act of 2015 here at an event in Portland. Over the course of the coming months until December 2015, the California Wine Institute, Wine America, and the OWA, in addition to other wine regions, worked with Senator Wyden's staff to make key changes to the wine-related provisions to ensure that there was broad wine industry support for the bill. And that was done in December 2015. By September 2016, more than half of U.S. senators and U.S. representatives signed on to be co-sponsors of the bill. This is very significant, showing bipartisan support for this effort. There was an attempt at the end of 2016 to include this language in an end-of-year spending bill, but it did not quite make the cut. So in January 2017, Senator Wyden had to reintroduce the bill in the 115th Congress, and work was undertaken by many groups to build up the co-sponsor list once again. There were, again, more than half of U.S. senators and representatives supporting the bill. And in December 2017, as the Republicans were pushing a tax cut bill, many provisions of Senator Wyden's Craft Beverage Modernization and Tax Reform Act were incorporated into the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which passed this last December. These provisions are included for only a two-year period, and the bill also included an unintentional drafting error that was not included in the language that Senator Wyden and his Finance Committee staff had developed, and we will go into more details on this issue in just a bit. In March of 2018, TTB announced that federal excise tax credits are not allowed on transferred wine that is removed from bond by any bonded premises other than the producing winery. At the same time, TTB provided an alternate procedure in effect through June 30th. In April of this year, the OWA, along with the Washington Wine Institute and Wine America, met with the TTB, Senator Wyden, and other legislative leaders in Washington, D.C. to discuss concerns around the announcement from TTB in March. In May 2018, after additional outreach, in particular from Senator Wyden to the Treasury Department, which oversees the TTB, TTB announced an extension of the alternate procedure through 2019, or the duration of the tax credits. In the meantime, there's an ongoing effort by industry groups to urge Congress to pass a technical corrections bill, which would alleviate the issues around the tax credits only applying to producing wineries. And in addition to that, to make these tax changes permanent since they were only included for a two-year time period. And that two-year time period was put in place due to the costs of the bill needing to contain costs. There is interest among legislators to have that extended, but it's finding the right vehicle for that extension. As a very brief overview, just to touch on the main benefits of the bill that passed in December, is that the bill reduces federal excise taxes for every Oregon winery, regardless of size. It increases the ABV allowed for the $7 tax rate from 14% to 16%. It also allows sparkling wine to qualify for the tax credit. And lastly, for our vineyard folks, it allows full deductibility of vine grafting and replanting costs in the year those expenses are incurred, effective September 27, 2017 through January 1, 2023. That level of deductibility goes down over the course of the coming years till January 1, 2027, when it's at 20%. I'd now like to turn it over to Martha with the TTB.
Thank you, Jana. This is Martha Tevenkamp with the Tax and Trade Bureau. As Jana mentioned, one of the changes wrought by the Tax Act was an increase in the alcohol ceiling for the still wine tax category. This legislation also, though, introduced two new sort of special tax classes, a very narrow category for mead, which is made from only honey and wine, and a very narrow category for certain grape wines that are produced only from grape and grape concentrates. So the ceiling was raised. That lowest tax rate will now apply to the ceiling was raised on the alcohol content level. That did not change our FAA Act, our Federal Alcohol Administration Act. The result was that we now have 8 different tax classes. Some of you who have been around for a while may recall that we formerly had 6. All of these provisions, to the best of my knowledge for now, are temporary, but as you've learned, there are some steps underway to make them permanent, perhaps. Other changes wrought by the Act include a temporary increase in the credit rate itself. It won't go. Pardon me, we're having some technical difficulties here. There we go. Okay, other changes brought by the Act are a temporary increase in the rate itself. Some of you may recall that it was formerly 90 cents a gallon. Now the maximum tax rate is $1 a gallon and up to 6.2 cents per gallon on certain hard ciders. Additionally, the credit became available on sparkling wines. Okay, other changes include the production. I'm going to go back here a moment. I double-clipped. Sorry. The production cap was temporarily lifted. Some of you may recall that it used to be at 250,000 gallons. Now anybody who is a producer of any size may take a credit on up to the first 750,000 gallons taxably removed. Other changes include, as Jana mentioned, domestically, the credit can only be used on wine that is both produced by the producer and removed from the producing premises. This is a substantial change from the previous small domestic producer tax credit that was available in years past. Additionally, credit may no longer be transferred for use on behalf of the sender of wine. So there's no provision in this new legislation to transfer the use of credit on behalf of a eligible taxpayer to, say, a bonded wine seller. Now, what didn't change? Production activities remained the same. So all of the production activities that were formerly listed in Part 24 are still considered to be production. In addition to that, we are applying the same sort of production activities that were previously available in 278. So production is going to include production by fermentation plus certain sweetening operations where you're adding juice or concentrate or sugar after the wine is fermented, certain wine spirits additions, amelioration operations, production of formula wine, and production of sparkling and carbonated wine. These last elements here count as what we call further production. And the advantage for you as a winery is this is the mechanism under which you could, say, produce a certain amount of wine at your winery, buy some in bulk, treat it with wine spirits, produce it as a formula. The entire volume then could be removed with benefit of credit from your producing premises. So let me walk you through a small example of that. Let's say that you purchased 100 wine gallons of a white wine and you added 25 gallons of wine spirits to it. Now you have a volume of 125 gallons. That entire volume of 125 gallons could be taxably removed with benefit of credit from your wine premises where you did the wine spirits addition. The next chart, I broke out the effective tax rates for all of you. This is a good reference material for you, but you can see in the columns here, we've taken the full tax rate, applied and assumed the maximum credit at each of these categories. So these are the breaking points of applying the tax in the at the various rates. This is what you would actually end up paying, what we might refer to as your effective tax rate. The slide that you are looking at now happens to pertain to still wines. We have another broken down set here that pertains to artificially carbonated wines, sparkling wines, and hard ciders. The same information is available to you there. You can see that it breaks down the effective tax rates for your convenience. Now, we've alluded to the alternative procedure that TTB issued in earlier this year and then revised later. I'm now going to walk you through a set of examples of how this applies and how it will work for you in the real world. What we've established for you here is a set of examples of using this process under Industry Circular 2018-1A. We sometimes refer to this as a constructive transfer. It's kind of a convoluted process, but I'm optimistic that this set of example documents will make it a little bit easier for you. So, first issue, obviously, just to briefly recap, we had a change in the way that tax credits could be taken by producing wineries. They went to a tiered system, and the maximum amount of removals were greatly increased. Under that tiered system, though, unfortunately, you had to both produce wine and remove the wine from your removing premises in order to take advantage of the credit. This same body of law did not allow for the transfer of credits and did not allow a winery to use credits on wine purchased in bond, no matter what the removal location. The exception to that, of course, is the further production issue that we covered just a moment ago. We then developed this Industry Circular 2018-1A to sort of solve this removal issue. Okay, sorry. Got to go back, pardon me. Okay, the alternate procedure that we established under Industry Circular 2018-1. What we're doing there, this constructive transfer, the wine itself is not physically moving. This is a set of accounting transactions or paperwork transfers. The status of the wine changes via these paperwork transfers. So important for me to emphasize, this wine may not physically be moving among these two proprietors, but it is changing the tax class via this set of accounting entries and accounting documents. This change is also temporary, of course. All transactions have to be completed under this circular by the end of December, December 31st, 2019. I would also encourage you to very clearly mark any removals that you make under these provisions as being made under this circular. Please put those directly on the removal documents, the transfer documents, and so forth. That's the most effective way to track what's going to be used and what has been removed under this procedure. So what you should be seeing now is slide numbered 3 that talks about a sample constructive transfer in bond from a bonded wine cellar to a bonded winery. This same process can be used for transfers from a bonded winery to another bonded winery. What you see happening here is a bonded wine cellar has received this wine and has been storing it in bond. They are, via this paper document, moving this wine on paper back to the producing winery. So the bonded wine cellar here is cold kissed storage. You can see that the transfer is going back to the producer, which is Martha's Orchards. They've listed off both of the bonded wine cellar number for Cold Kiss and the bonded winery number for Martha Orchards. They've very clearly marked this as a constructive transfer in bond under that particular circular. They've listed off the actual wine that is going back, hard ciders and so forth. They've summarized the tax rates there. Now, this invoice is not strictly required under the industry circular, but I highly recommend that you use it. It will help you keep your record keeping straight. It will help the bonded winery receiving the product back to keep their record keeping straight, and it'll enable you to more closely track these particular transactions. So this wine is going back only on paper to the producing winery. Next thing that happens is on slide 4, this producer receives the wine back in bond. It has come back from the bonded wine cellar back to the bonded winery. They are reporting this as received in bond on their winery report, most likely on line B3 under the bottled wine entry down there for received in bond. They make a simultaneous entry of removed on B8. So there's going to be two offsetting entries here. The producing winery would then pay the excise taxes with the use of whatever available credit they have on their next required excise tax return. Again, this is a temporary procedure, so all of this has to be completed by the end of December, December 31st, 2019. The next action that happens, this is the sample constructive tax paid return. This is the paperwork trail under which the wine is being constructively or on paper only returned back to the bonded wine cellar. So the next step is the producer now returns this as tax paid to the bonded wine cellar. You can see this is sort of a reversal of the slide we looked at earlier. Now the producer, Martha Orchards, is sending the product back to the bonded wine cellar, Cold Kiss Storage. Very similar to the transaction that we saw before, we've got the same set of bonded winery and bonded wine cellar numbers listed there. We've got the same summation of various tax rates that are in there. Finally, to wrap up the transaction, we have bonded wine cellar Cold Kiss. The bonded wine cellar has now received this wine back only on paper. They've shown it initially as out in bond, and then now it's coming back to them. It's not going to go back on their winery report because it's coming back to them in a tax paid status. The bonded wine cellar should put this wine in the tax paid area if they have one of the bonded wine cellar. They would record this wine, they would store it, and they would eventually ship it out, remove it as tax paid. This deadline is also the same as the others. These transactions all have to be completed by December 31st, 2019. Kelly will now discuss some different issues regarding taxpayer definitions, blending wine, and some implications under the OLCC requirements.
So Martha kind of talked through the meat and potatoes of the Tax Act, you know, what's really going to impact about 90% of the Oregon wine industry. And I'm going to discuss some issues that will happen to a smaller group, but they're still important concepts to understand. The Tax Act discusses controlled groups, and that is the quantities for tax.
I can't hear you, Kelly. You're muted.
Oh, sorry about that. So let me start over. So Martha kind of talked about all the big concepts, what's going to impact the vast majority of the Oregon wine industry. And so I'm going to talk about some of the smaller concepts that will impact fewer of you but are still really important concepts to understand. One limit on federal tax credits is a concept of controlled groups. So the quantities for TTB tax credits, they apply to the total wine removed by all members of a controlled group. So that's brother, sister entities, parent subsidiary entities. It's any corporation or entity that has more than 50% interest. And interestingly, importers using tax credits on behalf of foreign wineries, which is allowed under the Tax Act, they're considered a member of that foreign winery's controlled group. Another concept that's new under the Tax Act is the single taxpayer. That's two or more entities, whether or not under common control, so they don't have to have necessarily an interest in each other, that produce wine marketed under a similar brand, license, franchise, or other arrangement, are treated as a single taxpayer for purposes of the federal tax credits. TTB Regulations and Rulings Division, I spoke with them this week about this issue because I've gotten a number of questions about it, and they said that they are working on guidance right now and to expect that shortly. Another issue to note, blended wine. So this will impact you if you purchase wine in bond, bulk wine in bond, that you are going to blend in with your produced wine. So if you're blending wine, you purchase from another bonded winery to your wine, it's very likely result in two different tax rates on that final blended wine. So here's an example. So Kelly produced 100 gallons of Merlot. She bought 50 gallons of Pinot Noir from Martha. Kelly blended those two wines together, did no further production activities on that wine, so I'm not the producer of Martha's portion. Bottled and taxably removed all 150 gallons from my premises. Kelly can take any available credit on the 100 of those 150 gallons, the two-thirds of the portion that she produced. The remaining one-third, the 50 gallons I purchased from Martha, would be removed with no tax credit. I have to pay the full rate because I was not the producer of that wine. Alternatively, that wine could be transferred back to Martha Winery for removal with Martha's tax credits. So one-third at Martha's rate, two-thirds at the full rate, you know. And so federal tax will be paid at the full rate without credits on at least some portion of that blended wine when it's blended in from two different producers. And so you're going to have to decide what rates you want. Are you running out of rates? Are you going to want to use yours? Another issue that is important to know under the Tax Act, removals not of your own production do not count toward your TTB tax credit gallonage limits for tax payments. So if you remove 100,000 gallons of wine in 2018, your winery, but only 50,000 of those gallons were actually produced by your winery, the tax credits would work out as follows. So if you the first 30,000 gallons you remove, they're your produced wine, you get a dollar credit on all 30,000 gallons. If the next 50,000 gallons you remove were the gallons produced by the other winery, you get $0 tax credit on that wine. And then if the last 20,000 gallons of your wine that you remove is your produced wine, you'll get a 90-cent credit on it. So that 50,000 gallons you removed that was another winery's production does not count against your available tax credits. So the Tax Act I think a lot of states are coming across this, but the Tax Act is having an impact on state excise or privileged taxes. And here in Oregon, we have the privileged tax system. And so here's a quick summary of it for folks listening in. So the OLCC small producer privileged tax exemption is still in effect. The first 40,000 gallons of wine that are removed for sale in Oregon by a small producer, and a small producer in Oregon is any winery that produces at least 1 gallon but less than 100,000 gallons in a year, they're exempt from OLCC privileged tax. It's important to know, and you're probably aware of this, that the wine does not have to be produced by that small producing winery to be tax exempt, just among that first 40,000 gallons that's removed by the small producer. So this is going to cause a little bit of conflict with, it could cause some conflict with the Tax Act. So here's a tax accounting determination for purchased wine. So if a wine is produced by a different winery and transferred in bond, the receiving winery, if they're here in Oregon, must decide whether or not to remove from bond at its facility and pay the OLCC privilege taxes without federal tax credits because they didn't produce it, or transfer that wine back to the producing winery for the federal tax credit. And here's an example. So Oregon Winery A produces 300,000 gallons of wine a year at their Oregon facility. So they're a large producer. They make more than 100,000 gallons a year. They don't qualify for that small producer privilege tax exemption. Oregon Winery A, that big producer, sells 20,000 gallons of that wine in bond to small Oregon Winery B, who only produces 10,000 gallons themselves at their own production winery. Oregon Winery B can either remove that 20,000 gallons of purchased wine at its own premises and use the OLCC small producer privilege tax exemption if they're removing it for sale in Oregon, but pay the full federal taxes because they're not the producer. In the alternative, Oregon Winery B can transfer that wine back in bond to the producer, Oregon Winery A, and use Oregon Winery A's federal tax credits, but with no OLCC small producer privilege tax exemption. But if they transfer it back, and that Oregon Winery A made 300,000 gallons, where is Oregon Winery A at in terms of their removals? Will it be among the first 30,000, so will they get a dollar credit? The next 100,000, they get 90 cents credit, or are they going to be back at 53.5 cents? So if you get the tax exemption in Oregon, you get that 67 cents or 77 cents. So it's going to involve a lot of math. And so to summarize, I know this has been kind of a quick presentation. We've kind of hit the high points of it, but we're happy to answer questions. But here's a quick summary of what we've discussed. We went through the background. Jana talked about the background of the Tax Act and how Senator Wyden really kind of championed it, and OWA's strong role in that, how Martha talked about how the Tax Act lowered federal wine excise tax rates by increasing and expanding tax credits. Large producers now are able to use the credits. Foreign producers, sparkling wine qualifies. The lower tax rate for still wine is up to 16%, et cetera. And Martha talked about the TTB excise tax credits can only be taken by the producer of that wine when removed from their production facility. And Martha talked about what activities qualify for production. And then Martha discussed the alternative procedure, the constructive transfer and bond for folks who are wanting to move back to the production facility via paper only to remove from bond to get the tax credits. And then I discussed concepts of single taxpayer and controlled groups, blended wine, that's coming up quite a bit, and then finally the TTB tax impact on OLCC privilege taxes. So we're happy to answer any questions.
Yeah.
Martha, do you see those two, Martha? Do you want to?
Yeah. There. Sure. Hi, this is Martha Tevenkamp. I see we've had a couple of questions asked. Richard Lind had asked if we paid for removal from bond in the first quarter under the old tax rate, what's the procedure to get the overpayment returned? Well, I'm going to assume from this that you mean you removed wine in the first quarter at the 90-cent credit rate versus the $1 credit rate. The simple answer to that is the wine could be returned to bond and then re-removed at the appropriate rate, you would file a claim for the overpayment. That is the most straightforward procedure that I've seen yet. That's typically the way that an overpayment might be handled. I see we have another question here from Charlie Kidd asking, if I remove wine to another winery for bottling, then bring it back to my winery, do I qualify for the credit? The answer to that is absolutely. Bottling is not a production operation. So you're sending this wine out in bond from your bonded winery. Assuming that you produced it, you could send it to Kelly's Vineyard. Kelly could bottle it for you, return it to you by what we call an in-bond transfer. You could remove that wine, which has now only been bottled by someone else, taxably with benefit of the credit from your bonded wine premises. This assumes two things. One, that you actually produced this wine, and two, that the removal is ultimately to take place from your bonded premises. I see we have a third question here about do the same rules apply to labeling laws in that a wine under the new tax rate above 16% has a 1% tolerance of alcohol, and the all wines under 16 have a 1.5% tolerance? No, unfortunately not. What was changed by this legislation was the Internal Revenue Code that adjusted the tax rates and some definitions of production. This legislation did not change any aspect of the Federal Alcohol Administration Act. That's the body of law that dictates wine labeling and advertising. So those same tolerances that you cited are still in place, but they are at the 14% level, not at the 16% level. Next question was, does filtration count as production? No, because for production, what we're looking for there is some kind of volume increase. Now, if you go back to that sort of further production slide that I went through, you'll see that it talks about production of a formula wine, for example, or production of a sparkling wine or a wine spirits addition. What those things all have in common is that we've had a volume increase due to them. Filtering is probably likely to result in a volume decrease. So no, sorry, good try, but not eligible for a production operation. Okay, we have another question here. I seem to be a popular question question answerer today. Northwest Wine asking, does the wine removed from a third-party warehouse count against the first 30,000 gallons credit? Well, not sure what you mean by a third-party warehouse. To use the credit, the wine has to be removed by the producer from the producing premises. That is the driving force behind that alternative procedure that we put together for the sort of on-paper transfers. So I would say that no, the removal from the third-party warehouse would not count against the 30,000-gallon credit, primarily because they would not be eligible for any credit whatsoever. Any other questions? Here we are. We have a question. If wine you produced is sent to a storage facility in bond, is then returned to you in bond, I assume you receive the tax credit, correct? Well, if I'm following your question correctly, yes, you would. You produced it. You sent it over for storage, either labeled or unlabeled as what we might call shiners. The bonded wine seller transferred it back to you in bond. You are then removing wine that you produced from your producer wine premises. That wine would be eligible for credit. You're absolutely correct. Do we have any other questions? Come on, free shots at the government, lady. Free legal advice.
And if there are any questions that you have after the fact, here's our contact information for questions if you want to email us or call us.
This is Jana. So for OWA members, we will be sending out a link to the webinar. We'll also be sending out some additional resources to OWA members, and you're free to reach out to Kelly and Martha with additional questions as OWA members. As I mentioned, we are working with other organizations at the national level to try to work towards a technical corrections bill in Congress. That's quite a heavy lift, so you may need to live with this alternate procedure for the next couple of years. We are also working towards an extension of these tax credits beyond 2019, and we will keep OWA members up to date on those efforts as they move forward.
I do see that we have another question here. This is Martha Tevenkamp. We'll field this one. Follow-up question, apparently, does the wine need to physically move back to the producing facility? No, not if you're doing the transfer under that alternative procedure that I went through. The idea behind that is to avoid having to make that physical move. It's a paper transfer only.
Martha, this is Jana. One question that we had in advance is related to the question of if you've already paid tax in the first part of the year under the old rates. Our understanding is that TTB might be putting out some guidance on this in the near future. Do you have any information on that, when it might be available?
Yes, thank you for asking that. I'm hoping that they do put out some guidance. The reason for that is it is a morass of paperwork on your end as the winery or the remover, and candidly, it's a morass or paperwork or morass of paperwork on our end, having to process claims for what might be $10 or $20. My understanding is that they are still attempting to come up with some guidance on it. I do not know when that might be issued, but I'm hoping it is imminent. I should add that until such time, the returning it to bond and filing a claim for the refund appears to be the only option available to taxpayers at this time under Part 24. Okay, we have another question about filling out the excise tax return. When filling out the excise tax form, do we put in the full gallons, $7, and adjust from there to the true tax credit? Yes. What you would use the same sort of procedure that you used under the previous tax credit, except this time you'd be taking the credit of $1 versus the credit of 90 cents under the earlier procedure. So yes, please do the full gallons. Please do the $7, you know, this much removed with this benefit of credit as an adjustment, decreasing the amount due on the excise tax return. The net payment to us would, of course, be 7 cents a gallon, assuming we're talking about a product that is 16% alcohol by volume or less. Does the wine need to be labeled to be considered produced? No. The follow-up question to that, though, is could you pay the tax early on unbottled or unlabeled wine? Answer to that is you do not want to do that. First, you cannot remove unlabeled wine from bond. Wine has to be removed in some sort of a consumer-ready container, whether that's a bottle or a cask or a metal keg if it's going to be sold on tap. Wine has to be marked and labeled before it is removed from bond. If you do remove bulk wine from bond, which is theoretically possible, you have a limitation or a problem now, because there's very little that you can do with tax-paid wine. You cannot, at a normal bonded winery, bottle tax-paid wine. That has to be done at a special type of facility called a tax-paid wine bottling house. We used to have a lot of them here in the United States, particularly near ports of entry, because imported wine could not come in bond. They've sort of fallen by the wayside over the last decade or so as we've been allowing the importation of bulk wine in bond. Bottling it and labeling it is not necessarily the production point. The production point is removal from the fermenters on the back of that winery report, movement to the front, declaration of production. That happens when it's removed from the first fermenter. So bottling is a much later step in that process. Let's see if we get any more. Any other questions? I just cut it off. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time and attention. This is Martha signing off.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, speakers. A link to an online evaluation is now displayed on your screen. Please take a few moments to complete it. We do appreciate your feedback. This concludes today's webinar. Thank you for attending.